Actu SF, les podcasts.
Bonjour, merci d'être venu avec nous ce matin. On a une rencontre avec notre nouvelle lauréate du prix Utopial Jeunesse. You listen something? Ah, vous n'entendez rien. It's great. Est-ce que... Yes. Donc, hier soir, toute fraîche et émoulue du prix Utopial Jeunesse, nous avons avec nous Vic James. C'est le prix Les Puissants, le tome 1, Esclaves, édité chez Nathan, qui vient d'avoir le prix. Tous les ans, les Utopiales récompensent un roman ou un recueil jeunesse. Et c'est un prix qui est décerné par 6 jeunes de la région nantaise. Donc vraiment, le public ciblé, ils ont tous entre 13 et 16 ans. Et vous n'avez pas la traduction. Vous l'entendez? It's great. Ok. Ok, super. C'est bon.
I can hear you beautifully in English. My lovely translator is up there. It's wonderful. Thank you.
Avant de commencer, alors j'ai lu plein de choses. J'ai lu que vous aviez étudié l'histoire à Oxford, là où il y avait Tolkien. J'ai vu que vous aviez terminé votre doctorat du côté des archives secrètes du Vatican. Mais avant de commencer tout ça, vous venez de quelle famille? Vous venez d'une famille où on lisait beaucoup? Comment ça se passait pour vous?
Ok, so. Every writer begins as a reader, and I was so lucky that my parents joined me to every single library in our town. So I went to 1, 2, 3, I think 4 libraries, and every week I would take out the maximum number of books. And that was because my parents come from quite an economically disadvantaged background. My father could read, but my father could not write. So my mother wanted for me and my older brother to really be able to kind of embrace books and learning and reading. That was her gift. This is my mom.
Bonjour, maman.
So parents are the single most important thing in creating the readers and writers of the future. And also, I think because of that, I grew up, so the world of Les Puissants is a world of 1% and 99%. So the 1% has everything. It has money, it has power, and it also has magic. And for me, that world of inequality, it is our world today. It's very recognizably the modern world. But it was also something that I related to because I came from a poor, working class background. And because of my education, I was able to move into a sort of elite world. I went to Oxford, now I work in London. So for me, that gap, that distance was something that always felt very personal because of my family.
À partir de quel moment vous avez commencé à écrire? Vous avez eu envie de raconter vous aussi des histoires?
Yeah, I'm not getting that up well.
When you become to be to write some story.
Sorry?
When you become to write some story.
Okay, I think everybody is a writer. Everybody is born a writer, okay? Every child writes stories. And it sometimes makes me a little sad that people talk about themselves as an aspiring writer, or one day I would like to be a writer. You're always a writer, okay? So like everybody, I wrote little stories at school. The first novel I tried to write was about 10 years ago. And it was terrible. It was really, really bad. It was pure science fiction. As a child, the science fiction were my favorite books. So it had spaceships and aliens and advanced technology, and it was so bad. And I stopped at about 40%, and I thought, I will never be an author. Obviously, I can't do this. I'm not good enough. And I put that in a drawer, and I was so discouraged that I did not write anything else for maybe 8 years. And then I went traveling, and I was in Greenland. I was traveling because I was interested in Viking history. Okay, everybody loves Vikings, right? So I was in Greenland studying Viking history, and I heard an incredible story about how the Viking community in Greenland disappeared. Just one day, it's in the history books, and then it's gone. It totally disappeared. And I thought this would be an amazing story. So I started to write that, and that was the first thing I wrote that I thought, maybe this is good. Maybe this is okay. I wrote 90%, and then I put that in a drawer because I didn't know how to write the ending. The ending is the most difficult part of any book. And then the third thing that I tried to write was Les Puissants. So.
Et on est obligé de parler d'Oxford, là où enseignait Tolkien. Il y a eu une ambiance particulière, ça vous a un petit peu inspiré?
Sorry, I'm not hearing this.
Alors, attendez. Ah, c'est pour ça. Alors, attendez, si, hop. C'est peut-être un problème de son. Si vous pouvez refaire juste un petit essai. Ça marche?
Ça marche.
Ça marche. On a un autre. Voilà.
Thank you.
C'est pour ça que je suis venue tout à l'heure. Ouais, c'est pour ça. Merci beaucoup.
Yeah, I hear you.
Ah, bah voilà. Je voulais parler donc d'Oxford parce qu'évidemment vos biographies mentionnent que vous avez étudié à Oxford. Oxford, c'est l'université de la patrie de Tolkien. Est-ce que ça vous a influencé? Est-ce qu'il y a une atmosphère particulière? Vous avez mis un petit peu trop fort. Et comment ça se passe?
Look, Oxford is already a magical place, okay? Yes, I went to Tolkien's old college. So Tolkien, obviously, like I imagine every single person in this building now probably read Tolkien. He was a huge influence. The college felt like a fairy tale. For somebody like me, from just a normal background, my college was nearly 800 years old. It looked like a castle. And the best thing, if you've read Tolkien, you know the Ents, like the tree, the living tree giants, yes? They were real trees in the garden of my college. So when I was doing my study, I did English and history, so lots of books to read. And when I did those studies, I would sit in the college garden underneath the Ents, Tolkien's tree gods. So that was incredible. And also while I was there, Philip Pullman, I love Philip Pullman's books. To me, they are the perfect kind of fantasy for the sort of the jeunesse, for the children, adults, everybody loves them. But they have that sense of wonder that you find more in children's books than in adult books. But they're also very clever. Very clever, and they have a real emotional heart. I love, when I first read Philip Pullman, if you know the books, you know everybody has a demon. It's like your soul, but an animal. And, you know, when I first read Philip Pullman's books, I was like, oh, where is my demon? I want one. And both Tolkien and Pullman, and many, many other writers. I mean, somebody like Lev Grossman, The Magicians, he is also sort of spinning a fantasy off of kind of sort of Oxford, Narnia, C.S. Lewis. I think there's a really big tradition of sort of Oxford sort of fantasy. But also I knew for me that the story I wanted to tell was not that beautiful, historical, dreamlike fantasy. I wanted to tell something that was very modern, very contemporary, and it is basically our world right now, just if there was magic. So that's the world that I wanted to write about.
Est-ce que vous pouvez nous raconter un petit peu comment est née justement cette idée de votre roman? Pour l'instant, il y a deux tomes.
Yeah. So, okay, so often a question I get a lot, I think all writers at events like this will get this question, where does your idea come from? And for me, it really was, do you say in French, light bulb moment? Do you know that? Like a light goes on. Yeah. So my day job is I'm a TV director. So I make documentary programs for the BBC. And before that, I worked in television news. So every day reporting British politics, society, quite tough stories. So I was making a TV series for the BBC called The Super Rich and Us. So it was about exactly the 1% and the 99%. So I had this very strange day job where I would be calling billionaires, multimillionaires, people who, you know, like they own football clubs, they own jets, they are super, super, super rich. And as I talked to them, the one thing that they all had in common, some of them were good men, maybe bad men, selfish men, they were all men. But the one thing they all had in common was they understood that because of their money, they could do almost anything, you know? And it just happened in my head, just a click, I thought, it's like magic. It's like magic. For these people, their money is like magic. And I thought, this is the way I can write the book I've always wanted to write, which is a contemporary story, a modern story, but with fantasy, with magic, because everything is better with magic, right?
Et cette idée qu'on doit donner 10 ans de sa vie en esclavage, quand on est plutôt pauvre, comment ça vous est venu? Qu'est-ce que vous aviez envie de faire ou de montrer à ce moment-là?
Yes. So if you've read the book, you know that in the world of Les Puissants, everybody has to give 10 years of their life in service to the state. So for most people, this just involves going to do a really sort of boring, routine, but essential job. Maybe you work in a factory, maybe you work in an office. If you have a special skill, maybe the state will try and use that. And you have to start your slave days anytime between 16 and upward, but you have to start by 55 because the state wants people to be, you know, young and healthy and fit and able to work hard. So that's the choice you have. You can apply to go work directly for the magical aristocrats, okay? Just a tiny proportion of people get chosen for that. And obviously, people imagine it's a bit of a dream. They imagine that this will be much better than doing something boring in a factory for 10 years. But actually, it's a dangerous, dangerous world. Now, I know myself. I would have made that choice. And what the book, I think, shows you is that this is a dangerous choice that may seem very glamorous. So I think that's what I would have done. I would have thought, because even from childhood, I was fascinated by these great houses, the history, you know, the richness of the aristocracy. When you look from the outside, this is why I'm really glad that my books are read in France, because you have the same, you know, your heritage, the same kind of aristocracy, except you had a revolution. We had a civil war, And then we changed our mind. We went back. We went back to kings and queens and aristocrats. You changed your society. And I think what history teaches you is that the aristocracy, the elite, may look beautiful on the outside, but their wealth is often based on exploitation, colonialism, prejudice. They like to get power and to keep power. So, yeah, it looks pretty on the outside, and on the inside, maybe it's black and rotten. So for me, my slave days, I would have gone to an aristocratic estate, and I think I probably would have got in a lot of trouble.
On a Abby qui a 18 ans, on a son frère Luc qui a 16 ans. Ils ne vont pas aller tous les deux hein, chez les aristocrates. Mais est-ce que vous pouvez nous présenter ces deux jeunes gens, ces deux adolescents en devenir?
Yeah, so for me, it was very important to have teenagers at the heart of the story, because that's when you feel that you're making decisions that will set the course of your life. I mean, I remember being 16, choosing my exam subjects, my specialist subjects at school, and thinking because of this choice, it will determine what I do at university. What I do at university will determine my career, and my career will determine my life. And at a very young age, you have to make these choices that that could change everything for you going forward. I had to choose. In England, we have a narrow education system, so you have to choose art or science very early. Your choice is finished. And I wanted to kind of sort of to capture that by, you know, that's why it was really important for me that the heart of the story would be a boy who is 16, a girl who is 18. Because I also think at that time, that age is when you're just beginning to understand. Certainly for me, I was quite naive as a child. I was not particularly interested in politics. I look at Twitter now, and it's brilliant. I know that so many teenagers are so engaged and they're active. But not everybody. Sometimes it takes time to understand how you feel about how the world works. And I wanted to explore those two things as well with Luke and his older sister, Abigail. So Luke is quite idealistic. He knows straight away that what he's seeing is wrong, that this is oppression, that this is a broken system. But for Abigail, she's a very intelligent girl, but she's a little bit innocent maybe, a little bit naive. She sees the glamour of the aristocratic world, and it takes her a little time to see that actually this is a cruel system. So I wanted also to say that, you know, if you are a teenager and you don't yet know what your politics are, you know, you feel you should be angry, but you don't understand everything yet, and it takes time. I often feel that in books, you have teenage characters who are kind of very mature from the beginning. You know, like they immediately understand something and they're sort of active and aggressive and, you know, they're amazing. They're like heroes. But not everybody is a hero from the beginning. Sometimes it takes a long time to work out that actually you are a hero and this is your cause and this is what's important to you. So Abby in particular, across three books, has a real change. She starts off almost on the side of the aristocrats, and she has a very long journey to go on. And sometimes people say to me, but Abby's very intelligent. You know, she dreams of being a doctor. She's a smart girl. Why doesn't she see it? And the answer is sometimes it is very difficult to see things that are all around us. I mean, if you look at Me Too. Okay, now that's something that has been happening for years. For years. Why are we only talking about it right now? Sometimes it just takes time for an understanding to reach its kind of critical point, at both as a society and for individual people. So that was the journey I wanted to show for those. That's why, at the heart of my book, although many of the characters are adults, at the heart of the book, a 16 and an 18-year-old going on that journey.
Et Luc, ce qui est intéressant, c'est que lui, il n'est pas du tout chez les aristocrates, il est dans une ville industrielle, et dans cette ville industrielle, on fait référence évidemment aux classes populaires, aux ouvriers, mais du coup, il découvre, lui, la rébellion. Donc, parlez-nous un petit peu de tout ça, et puis du coup, de ces deux mondes en forme de miroir là, que vous nous offrez, l'aristocratie, donc vraiment les plus riches, et si ce n'est les plus pauvres, en tout cas les ouvriers, les masses les plus laborieuses.
So the first thing is that this is not fantasy. This is real. This is now. Okay. The only thing that is different in my book is that there is magic. Other than that, this is 100% our world now. England, France, America. The thing that I really wanted to show or to explore, because I don't write to, you know, I don't have a message. I just hope that people will enjoy, because I enjoy trying to figure out a very complicated world that we live in. I think this is the duty that we all have. We have to figure out what we believe about the world we live in. And if there's something that we don't like, we have to figure out, can I help change it? So that's what this, the whole three books is really about, two young people figuring out what they want to change about their world and how they can change it. But it's also about figuring out if you can change it, okay? Sometimes when people finish book one, also when people finish book two, they come up to me and they say, how is the rebellion going to win? And I say, are you sure that the rebellion will win? Because we know from history that rebellions do not always win. In fact, rebellions fail more often than they actually bring about change. So that was something I wanted to really explore in the book. If you feel that your society needs to change in a big way, is that possible? And if it's possible, how can you be part of it? And if you feel you can't change everything, how do you figure out what bit you personally can change? So in book one, we see Luke, as I said before, very idealistic boy. He likes to think he can change everything. In book one, he's like, yes, we can do this. You know, we can campaign, we can have a vote in parliament that will change society, that will end this system. And then, spoiler, at the end of book one, he discovers that it's not quite that easy. And really, sort of by the end of book three, I'm always very interested. Book three is out next year in France in March. So I keep quiet. But yeah, by sometimes people, when they finish book three, they say, okay, I didn't expect that. People like to think that... I think often in fantasy books, we're given this model of struggle against the Dark Lord. Okay, back to Tolkien. Sauron at the end. Goodbye, Sauron. But in real life, it doesn't happen like that. So that was sort of what I really wanted to explore.
On en parle depuis le début de cet entretien. Vous faites un portrait un petit peu du monde moderne. En tout cas, c'est votre choix. Pourquoi avoir choisi de le faire un petit peu avec de la magie et de la fantaisie? Est-ce que vous auriez pu raconter une histoire classique d'aujourd'hui, entre guillemets?
Yes, but I think everything is better with magic. With magic, with dragons. And I also think the real gift of fantasy and science fiction, so as I said, when I was younger, I read so much science fiction, more that than fantasy, more both of those than straight contemporary fiction, because it seems to me that the gift of science fiction and fantasy is you can play with ideas. You can imagine new solutions, okay? Because obviously, if I were to write a contemporary book, yes, I suppose you could have political protests. We all see this. When I was writing the books, it was soon after in London we had had Occupy. Did you have Occupy in France? A very similar, yeah. And obviously, we have new political parties in France. You have a whole new political party, and
c'était Nuit Debout, hein, chez nous, notamment.
So yes, I could write about that, but if you want that kind of story, all you have to do is you switch on your television, okay? It's happening. And what I thought about sort of fantasy and science fiction is that you can just explore sort of other ways. You can push people into a sort of more extreme personal situation to try and figure things out. And also, I just like dragons, which I think is a good reason.
C'est une bonne raison. Ça vaut. Votre biographie mentionne que vous avez été travailler pour vos études dans les archives secrètes du Vatican, qui s'y connaît un petit peu en termes d'oppression. Est-ce que vous en avez aussi tiré quelques idées pour votre roman?
I get asked a lot of questions about the Vatican secret archives. It's have you all read Dan Brown? Most people have read Dan Brown, right? Let me tell you, the Vatican archives are not like Dan Brown says. It's a very old. It feels really secret. You have to have a long interview in Italian. That was quite difficult. There isn't a catalogue. That the catalogue itself is like 500 years old, written by a monk in an old book. It is a crazy place. It like Oxford. It is like a sort of a fantasy world. I would love one day to write something that has that feel. I love books about libraries. I love books about books. I don't know if anybody has read The Invisible Library by Genevieve Cogman. Wonderful books. Jasper Ford's books. Obviously, you've got A Discovery of Witches, which is set in Oxford. I mean, there's a real tradition in fantasy of books about libraries and archives. I haven't written one of those yet. For me, what I was doing in the Vatican Archive was working on political documents, diplomatic documents between the Vatican, Catholic Europe, and England, which at that time had recently changed from Catholic to Protestant. And we were a big political problem for the Catholic Church. So yes, it does relate a little bit to the world of Les Puissants, because in the world of my books, you have some countries that have magic, and they have difficult relationships with countries that do not have magic. So this is developed a little bit more in book two and book three, and we learn that, you know, England, Japan, in this world, America is divided in two. Okay, some people say America now is divided in two. I'm not going to comment. But in my world, you have the southern United States, the Confederate America, that has magic. And you have the northern United States and France and China that do not have magic. So, yes, I love the big picture. I think I wanted to tell a very personal story, but I knew that I had to understand the shape of the whole world. And I think that's a really important thing. If any of you out there are writers, and if you're working on your own books, it's a really important thing for fantasy and for science fiction that you understand the the whole world of your book. Maybe only a little bit of that will be on the page, but you have to know how it works. So yes, the Vatican Secret Archives really showed me that you have to, that was about relationships between many, many countries, and that sort of really is part of what I enjoy in world building.
Vous nous avez dit que vous avez pas fait, voulu faire en tout cas une trilogie à message portant quelque chose, et en même temps vous racontez une histoire d'oppression, une histoire de système pour un public plutôt ado ou jeune adulte. Est-ce que ça vous confère une responsabilité particulière en tant qu'autrice?
Yes, absolutely. And you've made a perfect distinction there between message and responsibility. For me, it is about just, it comes from my own experience, okay? And I see it all the time. I have a niece, my brother's daughter is 16. She's amazing. And watching her sort of figure out, you know, she is becoming an adult. I'm seeing this. And I feel very much if you are a writer who hopes that your books will be read by young people, you have to, it is a responsibility that you have to take very, very seriously. Now, there's been some discussion on Twitter about whether books for young adults listen enough to young adults. I think there is some concern that obviously a lot of the people writing these books, we're not teenagers. I stopped being a teenager a few years ago. And also a lot of the people buying these books are adults. You know, teenagers, maybe they don't have their own money to buy books. You know, they have to go to libraries to get them. So there is this sort of whole debate about whether literature for young people is actually written by adults, bought by adults. And obviously we know for publishers, this is a great trend, that adults buy young adult literature. But we do always have to remember that if you're calling your book young adult, and if you want it to be read by teenagers, this is a readership that you have to listen to. And I think you have a responsibility to show that it's okay not to have everything figured out. I mean, for me, that was the really important thing in my book. And sometimes people write to me and they say, I really like this character, but then they did this, and now I don't like them so much. Or sometimes it's the reverse. They say, I didn't like this character at the beginning, but then she did that, and now I understand. And that was why my book has a large cast as well. There's lots of characters in it. It's not just about one person, because I wanted to show that there were lots of different kinds of responses, and these are all valid. They may not all be good choices. A lot of people in my books make very bad choices. But the important thing is to show that people, is to show that process that it's okay to get something wrong, and you just have to keep working hard to understand. And yeah, I don't write my books to preach a message. But I do write them, I hope, to make people think, whether you're a young adult, adult, whatever age.
Et c'est une question classique. Est-ce que c'est facile, de, en tant qu'autrice, de se mettre dans la peau de personnages de 16 ou 18 ans? Comment est-ce que vous avez fait? Vous avez discuté avec votre nièce? Vous avez fait vos souvenirs? Vous n'avez plus 16 ans?
Oh, please. Yeah, I mean, I'm very lucky in that because of my job as a TV maker, as a journalist, I get paid to talk to people. So I spend all day ringing people up. I work with charities, schools. You know, I am out there all day long saying to people, tell me about your life. So I'm really lucky in that respect. I also think, you know, I listen really hard on social media. My mother would probably tell you that I talk a lot, but I think it's really, really important if you are a writer to listen. At sometimes I just sit on the train and I listen to people. I'm quite nosy. I'm quite curious. And I just find other people fascinating. I find them absolutely fascinating. Everybody has a story. So sometimes I go on holiday with my mum and we go on a cruise ship for older people, holidays for older people. And dinner time is fascinating. You're at a table with, you know, seven people who may be age 60, 70, 80, and their life experience is amazing. Now, I don't normally meet people in that age group, but in an environment like that, just to hear people telling me about their lives, everybody is interesting. There is no such thing as a boring person. You have just not listened to the interesting story that they have to tell. So, yeah, I'm kind of nosy about people.
Hier, vous avez reçu le prix Utopial Jeunesse. Quelle importance a ces récompenses pour vous en tant qu'autrice? Souvent, l'auteur, il est derrière son PC chez lui. Et du coup, qu'est-ce que ça fait de recevoir des distinctions?
I feel amazing. So, merci à tous. You know, it's being a writer is a being a paid professional writer, because like I said earlier, if you write, you are already a writer. But yeah, being paid to write books, it's nobody tells you that it is a lot of hard work. Okay, I did not realize this. This was a shock. You write your book and you think my book is finished. Then a publisher buys your book. You'll have an editor who will give you notes to make your book better. In my case, my book was bought in the UK and the US by two really big publishers. So I got two editors telling me what to do. Not what to do, that's not right. They tell you, they send you their suggestions, and then you go back to your book and you think, does this suggestion work? Do I like this? And then, of course, you get bought by international publishers, so wonderful Nathan in France, lots of other publishers around the world, and like I said yesterday, the translator is a super important person. My book in French is only appreciated in France because of Julie Lopez, who is my translator. She emails me questions. She says, Vic, what do you mean? What did you want to say here? Can you explain this? Okay, so that kind of detail is what makes it possible for my book to mean something to people in France. So it is a lot of hard work. When I'm finishing a book, I am probably writing for maybe 18 hours a day. I'm in my pajamas, I wake up, I sit at my desk in my pajamas, I drink coffee, I write, I go back to bed, I do it again the next day, 7 days a week. So sometimes it's really not glamorous and it's a struggle. Of course, it is a massive privilege, but to get an award is just the best thing because, yeah, it's just why you do it. It tells you that actually, yes, this is a story that other people appreciate and that has meaning for other people, because something comes straight out of your head and it means something to you. So to know that it connects with other people is just amazing. And like I said last night, also for me as a British writer to be honored in France is very special. We all know that French people take their culture very seriously. So it's, that was a massive honor. And I do think also at a time of Brexit, to be able to say, you know, I am a European writer, and to be here at an amazing European festival. This is, you know, one of the biggest in Europe, the biggest in Europe, right, of its kind, maybe the world. So to be part of that for me is a real honor. So thank you.
Alors, si j'ai bien compris, le troisième tome va sortir en anglais, en français bientôt. Ça veut dire que vous êtes en train d'écrire autre chose. Quels sont vos projets? Sur quoi est-ce que vous travaillez?
Yes, so my next book. So first of all, Les Puissants. So Les Puissants is a trilogy. So there's three books. The television rights have been bought. Obviously, my dream that one day it's on the screen for you. I had a conversation with the studio that bought the books. They rang me up and they said, "Vic, we see that people die quite a lot in your books." They said, "We just wanted to check that people are still alive at the end of book three, because we would like this to be a series, so like maybe 3 seasons, 4 seasons, 5 seasons. So we still need some characters alive, please." And so for now, it's just 3 books. I haven't written any more books yet. If the TV series happens and it continues, it would be delightful to write more in that world. But I have just finished a new book. Just sold it in the UK, and we're just starting international sales, and it's called Sanctuary. It's set in America, contemporary America, where magic is real, but it's the kind of sort of traditional witchcraft. So if you have a problem with your relationship, you know, your boyfriend, your girlfriend, you could go to a divorce lawyer, you could go to a counselor, or you could go to the witch. If you have backache, you could go to the doctor, you could go to the chiropractor, or you could go to the witch. It's a very everyday kind of witchcraft. And it's kind of it starts with a sort of a high school tragedy. A young athlete dies at a party, and his best friend accuses his girlfriend of killing him by witchcraft. And she's the daughter of the local witch. So it turns into a modern American witch trial. So, and it ties into a lot of themes about sexual politics, you know, believing victims, and Me Too. So, again, I'm using magic. I'm talking about our world right now, but with magic, yes.
Est-ce qu'on arrive à la fin de cette heure? Est-ce que quelqu'un a une question à poser à Vic James? Vous allez pouvoir retrouver tout de suite en dédicace. Oui, monsieur devant.
Bonjour, merci. Vous avez dit que la fin d'un livre était la partie la plus difficile. Vous pouvez nous expliquer un peu en technique d'écriture ou en choix ce que ça signifie?
Yeah. Okay, so the thing about any book is you want the reader to finish the story for themselves, if you like. For me, that was really important. My personal experience of life is that nothing ends just like that. Of course, a book, you have to have a last page. But what I really wanted was for people to be able to imagine what happens next. That, for me, is the most important thing. This is why I love books in particular. I think as a reader, you are a co-creator with the author. I remember when I first read Harry Potter, I loved the world of Harry Potter, and there were not enough Harry Potter books, so I started reading fan fiction. And to me, as a writer, that is a sign that you've created a successful world if it continues to live inside the head of your readers. If they want more stories, if they can imagine the rules of that world and they know what might happen next. So for me, with Les Puissants, like I said earlier, rebellions are not simple, they're not easy, and often they're not successful. So I wanted to bring the book to something that would give a closure to this particular story, but where it's very obvious that the big story is still continuing. And obviously, when you have young people, so Luke and Abby, they're 17 and 19 by the time the book finishes, their personal stories are only just beginning. So I wanted to leave readers with a sense of what kind of adults might they become, what might they do in that world. So I left it where it felt right for me. Some readers are like, but what happened to this person? I want to know. I didn't want to, I say to those people, you know, you tell me what you think happens next. Maybe that's the truth.
Est-ce que quelqu'un a une autre question? Oui, monsieur.
Merci. Bonjour. Vous avez parlé tout à l'heure d'une adaptation pour une série télé de vos livres. Et ma question, c'est à partir de quel moment vous écrivez... Finger crossed. Vous écrivez pour la télé ou vous écrivez pour un livre? C'est-à-dire, est-ce que d'une certaine manière, c'est pas un peu vendre son âme au diable que de devenir auteur pour la télé, qui pour moi est un sous-genre par rapport à l'écriture littéraire en tant que telle?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. So first thing for me, I will not be writing the script. That's not what I do. I write books, and it's a very different craft skill. So I have to accept, you know, I take my books and I give them to the TV people, and they create something different, okay? So it has the same DNA as my books. Obviously, I want it to feel very true to the story. The reason they bought the books is because they love the story and they love the characters. Okay? So they didn't buy it to change it into something completely different that is not faithful to my books. I also had long conversations with them. It's, you know, this sort of thing doesn't happen immediately. It took about a year and a half for conversations, for paperwork, for contracts. And at that time, they come to me and they say, we think maybe this script writer, we think maybe this director or a person like this, you know, this is our vision for it. So I feel quite safe that they will do a wonderful job with it. So I trust them. For me personally, it doesn't trouble me. I wrote books. If they were only ever books, I would still be thrilled because they're books. The fact that somebody also wants to turn it into television is like a Christmas present. It's a bonus, you know? I did not write my books thinking, oh, this would be great for TV. I didn't compromise the story I wanted to tell by changing it for television. People sometimes say to me, but it reads a bit like television. I think there's obviously something about my style. People often say, oh, I could see it when I read it. I could imagine it on the screen. I think maybe that's just something about how I write, but it's not. I did not decide to write because I wanted television. Yeah? If I'd wanted a television show, I would have written a television show. I wanted to write books.
Notre train se termine. Un grand, grand merci à vous. Un grand merci pour la traduction improvisée de Bon Matin. Et vous pouvez tout de suite la retrouver en dédicace. Voilà, merci à vous. Bonne journée.
Thank you so much.